I want to take up in volume 13, November the 4th, 1921. So this is the reason why God used fiat in creation. Louisa said, I was all identified with my sweet Jesus. And as he came, I flung myself into his arms, abandoning myself completely in him as in my own center. Now notice that she's recognizing here the oneness that is there in their union. So that's John 14, verses 20 to 21. She said, I felt an irresistible force to stay in his arms, and my sweet Jesus told me, my daughter, this is the creature searching for the bosom of her creator. So Jesus is beginning to get her to understand that what she is experiencing is the deepest cry of the human race, that our need for God is greater than anything else. It surpasses our need for survival and our need for reproduction, which are two very great urgent needs in the human race. This is the creature searching for the bosom of her creator in order to rest in his arms. It is your duty to come into the arms of your creator and rest in that bosom from which you came out. So I want to give you Psalm 131 there. My soul is like a weaned child on its mother's lap. And this resting is what we do in adoration. We rest in his arms and we allow him to work in us and through us for others. In fact, Jesus said, you must know that many electric wires of communication and union pass between the creature and the creator. And in adoration, that's the perfect place for it to happen. Which render her almost inseparable from me. Now, I love the word almost. I think that's very interesting because in all Jesus' references to his Blessed Mother, he calls her my inseparable mother. He says we almost can get there. Not quite. We don't have her prerogatives or her grace. Which render the soul almost inseparable from me, provided that she's not withdrawn from my will. You see, that's our problem. That we can withdraw from the divine will at any moment. We don't have that extraordinary security that Blessed Mother had by being conceived in the divine will and conceived in grace. Because withdrawing is nothing other than snapping the wires of communication and breaking the union. Well, now that's as plain as it could possibly be. So if we withdraw from the divine will, we just break the union. It's as simple as that. It's like turning off the electricity. You don't have light anymore. The life of the creator, which is more than electricity, flows within the creature and she flows within me. So he's giving us this image that we can now understand. And that is that the power running through the electric wires. And we have our houses wired up for this electric current. And so when you turn on a switch, the power then is released into whatever gadget, your kettle or your washing machine or whatever, that you want this power to operate. So he's telling us that we have to be fused in the divine will all the time, all the time, all the time, for that divine power to be able to flow in us and through us all the time. In creating the human being, he said, I linked my wisdom to her intelligence. He's going to make a number of points, and this is the first one. He's going to do the intellect and then speech and then breath and then will and then eyes, for example. So we'll take them piece by piece. So the first one is the intellect. So what did he do in creation with our intellect? In creating her, I linked my wisdom to her intelligence so that her intelligence might be nothing but a reflection of mine. And if man reaches such great extent with his science as to give of the incredible, it's because the reflection of mine is reflection in his. So, 2 Corinthians 3:18, we become like that which we worship. So the Lord is saying that he connected the human intelligence with his wisdom. Therefore, as we grow in closeness to God, the thing that should be obvious in us is that we're seen as wise and understanding people. That's very interesting. Now, there's a key for you. Wise and understanding people. Okay. If you write that down, wise and understanding people. Said that the world should see us as that, even if they don't recognize there's a connection between you and God, that they would recognize that you are wise and understanding. That's very important. And of course, if you look at the seven gifts of the Holy Spirit, wisdom and understanding come first. Wisdom, understanding, counsel, fortitude, knowledge, piety, and the fear of the Lord. That is Isaiah chapter 11. Chapter 11 and about verses 1. I always say verses 1 to 10 when it's the early verses of a chapter. So, if the human being has his eye animated by a light, that means his enlightenment, it's nothing other than the reflection of my eternal light being reflected in the eye. So, he's again looking at the wisdom and understanding and talking about it in terms of the eye having light. When we talk of human beings having light, we're talking about enlightenment, interior enlightenment. So I want to give you Psalm 36, verse 26. In your light, we see light. That could be verse 6 instead of 26. In your light, Lord, we see light. In other words, God has to give us something before we can actually operate. Our washing machines can't work until you give it power. It's that simple. There's nothing wrong with the washing machine. It's all fixed. It's all fitted out. It can do certain things, but it does need electric power to actually operate it. So we need the enlightenment of God. Now, since volume one, we've been hearing Louisa saying continuously, God sent me a light and therefore I understood. This is what we're talking about here. So the second thing that Jesus says is, among ourselves, the three divine persons, we had no need to speak in order to understand one another. And anybody who has had an out-of-the-body experience, including Louisa, who has said this consistently, but even if you go on YouTube and you'll hear people giving you near-death experiences, as soon as they go on to the other side, speech is not actually required. When we go into the spiritual dimension, knowledge is communicated directly, intellect to intellect. The speech is for us, actually, the people in exile, or as I say, the people on the ground. So, among the three divine persons, there's no need to speak in order to understand one another. However, in the creation, I wanted to use a word because on earth, on the ground, as I say, we were going to need the power of speech in order to be able to communicate. And all creatures, at whatever level they are, they actually communicate. And scientists nowadays are beginning to study the way different creatures actually communicate with each other. We all know about bird song. We know about the way that dolphins communicate, for example. Whales have a wonderful communication system as well. They're able to communicate with each other thousands of miles apart. So communication is the issue. But with us human beings, we communicate. We're not good at communicating telepathically. Some people are, but we communicate through the word right from the very beginning of our lives. So Jesus said that from the very beginning, I wanted to use a word. So I said, fiat, and things were made. So here you're talking about Genesis 1 to 2. As soon as God says, I want, that's it. It comes into being. For those of you who may have read the works of Maria Valtorta, who has given us the wonderful insight into the Gospels and to the daily life of Jesus, this is brought out very clearly in the miracles of Jesus, that when Jesus would decide to heal a person, he would say, I want, yes, I want that one too. When he wanted to calm the storm, he said, I want it. And the storm obeyed. When he wanted to walk on water, the sea allowed it. The sea doesn't allow the rest of us to walk on water, but it allowed its creator to walk on water. So the I want of God is it. And so when we ask God, you know, for his divine will in something, we're actually saying, is this what you want? But even in our daily communications with each other, we also are trying to find out, is this what you want? Is this what you asked me to do? And we get a clarification from them. Is this what you want? So the I want it of God brought everything into being. And the I want it of God's Son brought all the healings and resurrections and cleansings of lepers and everything else into being. I want. So if he wants it, that's it. Now we do know that he wants us in the divine will. So the moment we agree, and every moment we agree, he will pour into us his grace in order to enable us to do what he actually wants us to do. And he tells us in all of these writings of Louisa how to operate in the divine will, because he actually wants us to do that. So he said, I wanted to use the word, and the whole of the scriptures is the explanation of that word. In fact, when Moses received the Ten Commandments from God, unfortunately, in the Western world, we call them the Ten Commandments, and Hollywood has eternalized this by a thundering voice saying, thou shalt not, thou shalt not, and absolutely distorted the thing altogether. The people of Israel understand the Ten Commandments as the ten words of God. And a word is a revelation. A word is a message. A word is a creative communication between God and the human race. And those ten words that God communicated through Moses gave the revelation to faulty human beings, many of them not obeying God's will. It gave them the pattern for which human beings could live peacefully with each other on the earth. For example, if 10 people are living in a neighbourhood, I mean 10 households, and all of those households are living those 10 words, it means that everybody in that neighbourhood has their property secure, their relationship with their spouses secure, their reputation is secure, their relationship with God is secure. Everything is secure if those 10 words are actually put into practice. It's when society actually deteriorates and people have pulled out from that commitment to those 10 words that you get murders and you get robberies and you get suicides and you get all kinds of terrible aberrations going on, because they've gone outside of the pattern that the maker of the universe said, this is how it will work. And yet each one of us, when we have bought a machine, I'll go back to the washing machine again, If you have bought a washing machine, you got a manufacturer's handbook going with it, explaining how the machine was made, how it was put together, what it was meant to do, how to do it. And also you get the instruction that if something goes wrong, this is how you troubleshoot. And if the troubleshooting doesn't work, contact the manufacturer. Well, now that's the Bible in a nutshell. It's telling us that the manufacturer of the universe, the manufacturer of the human race, has put these beings on the earth for a particular purpose, and they can do these things, and it will work within the revelation of the 10 words. If you go outside of the 10 words, you're going to need an awful lot of troubleshooting. And when the troubleshooting doesn't work, as it most of the time doesn't, there's only one thing to do, and that is go back and have recourse to the Maker. Go back to the one who actually made these creatures, and that is how you will find out how to solve the problem. So this word of the Lord is actually terribly important. And of course, in case I forget, when Jesus became incarnate, the word that had been issued at the dawn of creation became flesh and dwelt among us. And so the word came to us in person. And when we celebrate the Eucharist, we, first of all, the first half of the liturgy, we celebrate the word. And the second half, we celebrate himself. The word and the sacrament are two sides of the one person. So Jesus said, in creation, I, that is God, because Jesus is God, he's one of the three divine persons, I wanted to use the word, so I said fiat, and all things were made. And the scientists have now demonstrated, I mean by the scientists, I mean the astrophysicists, have now demonstrated, they've gone way beyond the Big Bang. None of them believe the Big Bang anymore. It was wonderful when I heard some professors saying, we no longer believe the Big Bang because you'd need a match to create the Big Bang. Well, now, any six-year-old could have told them that, but they had to find out that the hard way because they're very intelligent people. And now they have gone right back, and they have gone back to a point, a single point, which they call a singularity. And they say that the creation happened so fast. I mean, the entire universe came into being so fast that they had to make a new estimation of time so that they could sort of say it took X number of seconds to do it. But in the new time that they have developed, they're talking about trillions beyond trillions, beyond trillions, beyond trillions, below 1 second. Our minds cannot take on board what the scientists are actually saying. But we knew this from the Lord anyway. It's taking them millennia to come to something they could have read about in Scripture. And so that I want of God meant instant creation. And the creation is still expanding. And when we come into the divine will, the I want of God comes into you. And your soul begins expanding, expanding, and he creates new heavens, new stars, new everything inside of you. And the mystery of creation and recreation begins to work inside of us. That's the miracle that we're involved in. That's the mystery. That's the wonder. To this fiat, Jesus said, I bound and gave the power that creatures might have the word in order to understand one another. So he gave us the word to understand one another. Therefore, human voices are also linked to my first word, which is fiat. And therefore, the greatest word that we can give to him is fiat. Fiat mihi secundum verbum tuum. Be it done unto me according to your word. That's the greatest thing we can say to him. And I think we need to say fiat very, very frequently to give joy to the Blessed Trinity that the human race is beginning to come back. To this fiat I bound and gave the power that creatures might have the word in order to understand one another. Therefore, human voices are also linked to my first word as though by an electric wire. And from it all other words descend. And as I created man, I breathed on him with my breath. That's Genesis 2:7. Infusing life into him. That's an exact quotation of Genesis 2:7. But in this life, I infused in him, I placed my whole life. In this life, we're talking about living in the divine will. I placed my whole life according to what human capacity was able to contain. So he has given us his whole life. But if my capacity is that of a thimble, then I am an absolute miniature of him. If my capacity is that of a jug, I am still a miniature of him, but a bigger one. If my capacity is that of a huge container, like one of these oil tanks, then yes, I'm a bigger image, but it's still a miniature of him because he's divine and human. So each one of us is meant to be a miniature of Jesus himself, the Word. One of the things I love about St. Therese of Lisieux, you often hear me talk about her, is that the Pope who canonized her said that she was a miniature of Christ. Like, that's the greatest thing he could have said. And in fact, once he said that, nothing else was required. So in this life, I infused in him, I placed my whole life according to what the human capacity was able to contain. But I placed everything in him. You may be a miniature, but everything's there. There's something about miniatures that's actually very attractive to us. When we see enormous beauty in detail in a miniature, you just are lost in wonder at the artist that could do such a thing. There was no, sorry, when I say I made a mistake back there. In the creation, I breathed on him with my breath, infusing life into him. And I said, now in the divine will. But of course, Adam was created in the divine will. That's the bit I need to insert in there. So I'm correct in saying that this is what he does in the divine will. But he actually created Adam and Eve in the divine will. And that's why he placed everything in the human being. And there was nothing of my own that I did not share with him. So Adam and Eve had divine life, divine union, divine love. It was absolutely amazing. They had divine knowledge. Adam and Eve had knowledge of everything. They didn't have to learn. And look at the knowledge that Louisa has in these writings of mystical union with God. And she has never learned either. So even his breath is the reflection of my breath with which I give him continuous life. So the first thing was the intellect. The second thing was speech. And now it's the breath. And that breath has been given by God, wanted by God. And his breath is a reflection of my breath with which I give him continuous life. So with every breath, we should consciously breathe in the breath of God. We're breathing it anyway, but if you breathe it in consciously as the breath of God, you won't worry about COVID-19 or anything else. While his breath is reflected in mine, that's Adam's breath was reflected in God's, and I feel it continuously within me. So the divine will was operating in man. So there's this wonderful communication going on. See then how many relations or connections or bonds there are between myself and the creature. This is why I love her so much. When you say her, you mean the soul. Because I look at her as a birth from me, exclusively mine. Now I'm going to give you a little moment off duty. A class of 7-year-old girls were asked by a teacher who needed her head examined, why did their parents love them? They were given all kinds of reasons. And then finally, one little girl who was obviously intending to be a philosopher in the future said, they love us because nobody else does. And then it was up to the teacher to fill out that little revelation that the child gave. And that is, they love you because you're theirs. I love you because you are mine. And you find exactly the same thing in Isaiah 40 to 43. I love you. I have made you. I redeemed you. You are mine. Okay. And it's this thing that when a parent looks at a very small child that they have brought into being, everything inside of them goes out in love to that creature, because that little creature is a reflection of the parent. I am you in another generation. I am the incarnation of your love. And that's what we are. We are the incarnation of God's love. And therefore, it's this, you are mine. And the early books of the Bible are quite strong in repeating over and over about God's jealousy. Now, God's jealousy is this exclusive love. You are mine. You don't belong to anybody else. And it's exactly the same with parents. This child is mine. Other people would be told to mind their own business. This is my child. I will take care of him. I will do everything for this child. And it's an affront to the parent if anybody else wants to interfere. Well, that's exactly how God feels about us. And that's why you read those wonderful words in Deuteronomy 32, 12. The Lord alone was her guide, which is true in a very real way here with Louisa. And then he said, we're coming to the next one now. We've done the intellect, speech, breath, and now we're coming to the will. And then, how did I ennoble the will of man? I ennobled it because I linked it with mine, giving it all my prerogatives. I made it free. No other creature is free. We're the only free people. We're the only ones who can say yes and no. If you plant a flower in your garden, it is going to grow and it's going to flower. It has no freedom not to. But we are free. He said, I made it free just like mine. That's where we are so like God. So that's Psalm 86 verse 4. I said you are gods, all of you sons of the Most High. And Jesus quoted that in John chapter 10. And I also want to give you Psalm 8. Yet you made us little less than a god. With glory and honour you crowned us and gave us power over the works of your hands, and you put all things under our feet. This is incredible. Okay. So he said, how did I ennoble the will of man? I did it by linking it with mine. So the will of man reaches its most noble position when we bring the will back into full connection with the divine will by our surrender to the divine will. I made it free, he said, just like mine. And if to the body I had given two little lights, limited and circumscribed, which started from my eternal light. There were the eyes. The human will, I made all eyes. There's your interior sight, your interior understanding. And with this interior gaze that we have, we can look at a person and know things about them without ever being told. You can look at a person and know whether they're living a good life or a bad life. You can look at them and know whether they are sick or well, whether they're happy or unhappy, whether they're in a time of stress or a time of peace. Our eyes can read that. And the more deeply we go into union with God, the more completely you can read another person. To the point of actually telling that person something about themselves that they've never told anybody else. And that's very often the door to opening that person up to God. Yes, that's usually called a word of wisdom or a word of knowledge. He said, I made the human will all eyes. Therefore, as many acts as the human will forms, so many eyes can it say it possesses. So each act of our will is extremely important. It looks to the right, it looks to the left, it looks to the back, it looks to the front. And that's why when you get a description in the book of Ezekiel in chapter 1, you get a description of God, the only one who ever tried it except John in the book of Revelation. He describes incredible angel-like creatures with eyes all over the place. And if someone tries to draw it, it looks quite ugly to me. But what they're actually saying is full of wisdom, full of understanding. And as we grow in closeness to God, we grow in fullness of wisdom and understanding. And if the human life is not animated by my will, it can do nothing good. Now that's John 15:5. Without me, you can do nothing. In creating the human will, I said to it, you will be my sister upon the earth. My will from heaven will animate yours on the earth. We will be in continuous communication or reflections, is what my book says. And whatever I will do, you will do as well. That's the echo. I by nature and you by the grace of my continuous reflections. I will follow you like a shadow. I will never leave you. There's Psalm 139. Where can I go from his spirit? Where can I flee from your face? If I go to the heavens, you are there. If I go into the depths of the sea, you are there. If I go into darkness, your darkness is not dark to you, and the night is as bright as the day. In actual fact, we can't leave him and he can't leave us. So I will never leave you. Joshua 1:5, where Jesus said that to the chosen people at the beginning of their life in the promised land, I will never leave you or desert you. You have Matthew 28:28, where Jesus says, I will be with you on all the days that are coming, even to the very end. There's also a text in John 14. I don't remember the verse, but that'll help you to go looking. Where Jesus says, I will never leave you or desert you. Never. So if we have a sense that there's a gulf between us and God, we have created it. And what creates the gulf is our rebellion, our going out of his divine will, our sinfulness. That creates the gulf. But he will never leave us. And of course, the greatest communication between God and us is the intellect to intellect. And people like St. John of the Cross have told us that intellectual visions are the highest level of communication that we can have with God. Louisa had these, other saints have them as well, and John of the Cross explained them very well. So he continues, "My only purpose in creating man was that he would do my will in everything." Now, that needs to be taken off the page and written up on your fridge. The only reason why we were created was to do God's will. When you read the Old Testament scriptures from page 3, or I should say chapter 3 of Genesis, right to the very end, God is struggling with the human race to try and get the human race or somebody in it to do his will. If the chosen people had done God's will, they would have set up the kingdom of God on earth and everything would have taken off from there. Fast forward, if the early church had been perfect, then everything did in fact take off from there. But the world would have long since have been conquered if the church had been at the level that she should have been at. And sadly, if the church wasn't in crisis, neither would the world be in crisis at this moment either. So my only purpose in creating man was that he would do my will in everything. But with this, I wanted to bring into existence new births from myself. I wanted to make of him a prodigious portent, worthy of me, and in everything that he would be similar to me. Alas, the human will was going to be the first to set itself against me. Now, we do know that Satan was involved in seducing man and all of the rest of it. But here we're looking at the enormity of the tragedy that God wanted to give all the gifts through the human will, and it's the human will that actually rebels. "Take a look," he said. "All things are done between two. You have eyes, but if you did not have external light, which illuminates you, you could see nothing. You have hands, but if you did not have the necessary things with which to do your works, you could do nothing." And so with all the rest. Now, this is how I want sanctity in the human being. Between her and me, it is between the two of us. This is a he and I mystery. And we have to understand this, each one of us. Even though we're all trying to live in the divine will, we're all trying to grow in closeness to him. At the same time, what is happening in each one of us is unique, is unrepeatable, and is totally a he and I thing. Make sure you are not copying somebody else. Make sure you give your own inward, authentic responses to God. Make sure you're saying your own prayers and not just repeating other people's prayers. Make sure. Because this is a he and I mystery. This is how I want the sanctity of the human being. Between the soul and me, it's going to be between the two of us. I on one side, she on the other. He says that I will be giving of my own life and communicating my sanctity to her as her faithful companion. And then our job is to receive it. So she receives it as my faithful companion and my inseparable companion. Now, inseparable means that we are living at the level of union with God. In this way, she would be the eye that sees, and I would be the sun that gives her light. She would be the mouth that speaks, and I would be the word. I want to give you Mark 3:15 there. She would be the hands, and I would be the one who administers the work to let her operate. She would be the foot, and I would be the step. She would be the heart, and I would be the heartbeat. But who forms this sanctity? This sanctity is formed by my will alone. This is divine will sanctity. Okay? This is divine will sanctity. He does it. So, I am the eye, he is the light. I am the mouth, he is the word. I am the hands, he is the administrator of the work. I am the foot, he is the step. I am the heart, and he is my very heartbeat. He is my breath, he's my life, he's everything. My will alone is that which maintains the purpose of creation in order. The sanctity of my will is that which maintains perfect balance between the creature and the creator. These are the true images which will come out of me. Now, that is Romans 8:29. But I also want to give you Romans 8:19. That St. Paul says that the whole of creation is crying out for the true sons of God to show themselves. Okay? And these true sons of God have to be true images of God. We've got to be like him. Because the restoration can't happen unless man comes back into the original order. And so Jesus is describing very beautifully there how we are to come back into the original order. So, November the 8th, 1921. To live in the divine will means to multiply the life of Jesus. As I was in my usual state, my beloved Jesus made himself seen while taking a light from my interior and carrying it away. Now notice the light is inside of her. That's Matthew 5:14. You are the light of the world. And this light has got to be put on a pedestal so that everyone will see it and give glory to the Father in heaven. So it goes on from 14 to about 17. So this light is inside of her. And Louisa shouted, "Jesus, what are you doing? Do you want to leave me in the dark?" And he, all sweetness, said, "My daughter, don't worry. I'm taking your little light with me, but I leave you mine." Oh, I wouldn't have a problem with that. You can take all the light that I have away and give me yours. That would be just absolutely fine. "This little light of yours is nothing other than your will," he said, "which, having placed itself in front of mine," 2 Corinthians 3:18, "has received the reflection of my will." 2 Corinthians 3:18 says, "You become like that which you worship." Therefore, it became a light, because God is light. And so that light is reflected on us. I also should give you the book of Exodus, and I think it's chapter 34, and I don't remember the verses, where Moses came down from the mountain, having been on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, and his face was glowing. His face was glowing to such an extent, I would imagine the light was not just in his face, in his whole person, that even Aaron was afraid. And in order to get the people to come close to him, he had to cover his face with a cloth, because they couldn't cope with the light that was coming from his person. So we go into the light of God, and his light is reflected on us and in us. So because this light was taken from Louise's interior, so it was in her. The enlightenment is given to us inside. So Jesus said, "This little light of yours is nothing other than your will, which, having placed itself in front of mine, has received the reflection of my will. Therefore, it became a light. I'm taking it in order to let it go round. I will take it up to heaven as the most rare and the most beautiful thing which the human will that has received the reflection of the divine will." Why would he take it up to heaven? All the saints and all the angels need to know that the human race is beginning to come home. The prodigal son is beginning to return. And of course, when the prodigal son begins the journey home, then the feasting starts. And the feasting starts with the father. That's why Jesus takes this little light out of Louise's heart, brings it to heaven to show the father. "I will let it wander among the divine persons," he said. That's the most holy Trinity. "So that they may receive the homage and the adoration of their own reflections." That's your 2 Corinthians 3:18. The only ones that are actually worthy of them because they're in the divine will. "And then I will show it to all the saints so that they too may receive the glory of the reflections of the divine will in the human will." So that is what happens. Put a little marker there. And it is the reflection of the divine will in the human will, which means that the human race is returning, that the human will is coming back into subjection to the divine will so that God can reign on the earth. And this is such a miracle, it's such a wonder that all heaven rejoices. "And then," he said, "I'll make it flow throughout all the earth so that all may take part in such a great good," because this is only a beginning. And gradually this needs to flow out into the whole earth and become a great river and then a great ocean and conquer the earth so that God can reign on the earth. "Immediately Louisa said, 'My Lord, forgive me. I thought that you wanted to leave me in the dark. This is why I said, what are you doing? But when it's about my will, feel free to take it whenever you want.' So while Jesus was carrying this little light in his hands, I cannot say what happened," she said. "I lacked the words to express myself." Because something that happens on a supernatural level is extremely difficult to express in human words. "I just remember that he placed the little light in front of his person, and the little light received all of his reflections in such a way as to form another Jesus." Because in this divine will spirituality, when the human will comes back into the divine, as it does, it is made into another Jesus. And what we will have on the earth is that the mystical body of Christ will incarnate him fully. He will live on the earth. That's how he's returning. It's a great mystery. And it's the most marvelous thing that we're alive for this. "And every time my will repeated its acts, so many Jesuses were multiplied." So all the acts become divine lives which are spread out into heaven and into the earth. So Jesus said, "Now do you see what it means to live in my will? It is to multiply my life as many times as one wants, and to repeat all the good that my life contains." So you need a VIP on that little verse. Living in the divine will means multiplying Jesus' life for as many times as one wants, because you'll do that every time you do an act, and to repeat all the good which my life contains. And the earth is in such dire straits at the moment, it needs this as its healing and resurrection. Afterwards, Louisa was saying to Jesus, "My life, I enter into your will to be able to extend myself in everyone and to everything." Now, this divine will spirituality that we're in is for the benefit of everybody else. We're not in it for our own growth in holiness. We leave that to the Lord and we look after our neighbours. "I want to extend myself to in everyone and to everything, from the first to the last thought, from the first to the last word, from the first to the last action, the first to the last step, as it were done, are done, and will be done. I want to seal everything with your will," she said, "so that you may receive from everything the glory of your sanctity, of your love, and of your power. And so that all that is human may be covered, hidden, and marked by your will. Now notice, covered by the divine will. We can't change past events into divine will that weren't divine will. So that all that is human may remain covered, hidden, and marked in the divine will. May nothing human remain in which you do not receive the divine glory. But we're trying to cover them so that when the human race gathers enough momentum to really return to the divine will in this avalanche that must actually happen, then all the rest of the human race benefits as well. May nothing human remain in which you do not receive divine glory. Now, while I was doing this and other things, my sweet Jesus came all festive, accompanied by innumerable numbers of the blessed. And he said, the whole of creation says to me, my glory, my glory. And all the saints responded, behold, O Lord, we give you divine glory for everything. I could hear an echo from all sides saying, for everything we give you love and glory. Now, but it's us in the divine will that's got to start that chorus. The faithfulness needs to come up from the earth for righteousness to come down from heaven. That's Psalm, I think it's 86. So Jesus added, blessed are you, and all generations will call you blessed. Isn't that absolutely amazing? Jesus says to Louisa what Blessed Mother said about herself, that she was so privileged. Blessed Mother was so privileged in all the graces given to her and the privileges given to her and the mission given to her as well, that all generations would call her blessed. Now, it will be generations in the future who will call Louisa blessed, because we're only at the beginning of this and very few people as yet have really taken this up. So I want to give you Luke 1:48, because those words are taken from Luke 1:48. My arm, Jesus said, will make works of power in you. Now, my arm means the power of God. John 12:38. You will be the divine reflection, and filling the whole earth, you will make me receive from all generations that glory which they deny me. So it's the beginning of the healing of the human race. Now, Jesus did everything for us. Blessed Mother cooperated with everything that Jesus did, and she is the co-redemptrix. But we now must actually put our drop of water into the wine of their love. It's now time for us to pick up the life that was given to us. That's like saying the parents have done everything for the children. It's time now that the children pick up the challenge of life and go ahead, go forward. On hearing this, Louisa said she remained confused and annihilated. And annihilated, I think she means really humiliated. And I did not want to write. And he, caressing me, said, no, no, you will do it. I want it. Now, you see the fiat there? There's the pronounce. It's pronounced. If he wants it, it will happen. It's as simple as that. What I said will serve for the honour of my will. I myself wanted to pay the first homage, which befits the sanctity of my will. Even more, I said nothing to prepare, compare to what I could say. So Jesus himself is the one who lived the divine, excuse me. Jesus himself is the one who lived the divine will in all its fullness, because he was God and man. Blessed Mother was the next one who lived divine will in all its fullness as a human being. And now Jesus says he's going to lift Louisa into this extraordinary position, and she will be the first of all those who were born with original sin to enter into this great privilege. We'll stop there for the moment.